10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, lift off.
Studio One. Welcome to the Beyond Ringside Tuesday Night Conversation. Yours truly, the Magic City Motor Mouth, your host and moderator for this fiasco of fun. Fast Eddie Lane on this side of the control panel. Folks, want to take a moment to say thank you to, first off, to everybody who has been joining us on our podcast, on our replays. Podcast available through BeyondRingside.podomatic.com. Of course, the replays and recent interviews are also available on Beyond Ringside Radio. Check out BeyondRingside.com and you'll catch us right there. Ladies and gentlemen, I am being joined. I'm trying to figure the best description. A gentleman who has worn and still continues to wear a number of hats in the world of professional wrestling. He is a multi-time world heavyweight champion, a very prominent figure, live events and television, and now, through his direction, on DVD. Ladies and gentlemen, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce. Mr. Pearce, always a pleasure, sir.
Oh, I appreciate you having me. I would have settled for the sexiest man alive, but you and I know that's a stretch.
I don't gauge guys now. You know, hey. Now, if we were talking about Alyssa Milano, then I would say one of the sexiest women on the planet. But, you know, hey, just a little bit of a difference there, brother.
Yeah, well, you know, I'd buy that for a dollar, too.
Amen. I remember when you came on and I brought out the new question that we've been doing about the zombie apocalypse, and you gave your answer, and everybody who has heard you say that, it's like they're like, you know, he's got a point. Well, the zombie apocalypse occurred, and you mentioned that Kim Kardashian, because they would never mind, we'll stop there. I believe your exact words were they'd be munching on that ass for days. However,
yeah,
I want to lay out one statement right off the bat before we get started on seven levels and everything that is around that. There is a phrase, and being where you are and being where you have worked on a number of occasions with KDOC and Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, the phrase really does come into play. You know, I really enjoy acting, but what I'd rather do is direct. How much does that really apply to you right now, Adam?
I guess it depends on the project. I mean, there's a lot of times where you love nothing more than to be behind the scenes, behind the camera, making it happen. And then I'll be honest, there's been other times where I've had that job and I wanted to shoot myself. So it all depends on your crew and what you're doing, and I guess what the pay is. That's always a factor, is it not?
There's some dollar signs involved. I'm all ears, especially if the right dollar signs are involved.
Absolutely.
Now, one of the things in particular is the factor of something that you and I have discussed on previous days while it was happening and now has come to light and come to a physical form in a DVD. And that is referring to the feud, to use that term, between you and one Colt Cabana in what was called the Seven Levels of Hate. That is now available on DVD documentary.
Absolutely.
I want to ask first, I know that after having watched this, that there were multiple reasons why you wanted to put this together. But what was your original inspiration and driving force for starting the project of the DVD documentary?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. You know, I think from the outset, there really wasn't. I never set out to put it out. I didn't think there was much to it in terms of anything intriguing outside of the wrestling matches themselves. I mean, I thought there was always possibility to put the matches together, but to be real honest, I didn't really think about sitting down and documenting everything that happened from beginning to end until things started to go sour. And once that happened, I figured, well, you know, maybe there is a kind of a human element to this, and there's a hook for wrestling fans outside of you know, just a normal, what I would call boring wrestling storytelling, and I say that tongue-in-cheek, but after 18 years, I've seen a whole lot of it, you know. So for me, it wasn't so appealing, but once things kind of got crazy and then real life was impacted, and once you interject some real drama into things, I say, well, maybe there's something here, and I'm glad I went and got all that footage and put out the movie. The response has been great.
Watching the closing credits was actually one of the reasons why I asked the leadoff question the way that I did about Hollywood. Directed, produced, I mean, you handled the majority of this on a solo effort. First off, when you first started to think about this and put it into play, did you realize what you were going to be setting yourself up for?
No, hell no. In fact, you know, I was such a control freak about this thing that I wanted to kind of immerse myself in the entire process. So from the actual first edits, actually the first three or four edits, to music choice, to shipping, receiving, I mean, postage. I mean, I don't know, dude. I know the intimate details of the people's lives at my post office now. I mean, things I never thought I would get into. I'm glad I went through that process, but I can tell you unequivocally, without a shadow of a doubt, I will never do it again.
Now, I'm going to go ahead and take from the DVD open from the version that I have on hand, and you missed a couple of disclaimers.
Oh, did I?
Yes.
Which ones?
Number one, the top of my list, please keep your hands and feet inside the car until the ride has come to a complete stop. Packages sold by weight, not by volume. Price includes tax, tag, and title. Dealer keeps all rebates. Available in 27 different languages by pressing the SAP button on your remote control. You must, and my favorite one, this is one that I've used for years. You must be at least this tall to ride this ride.
Well, I'll have to use those on part two.
And of course, let's see, if you do not understand or cannot read all directions, cautions, and warnings, do not use this product. Please allow someone who can to assist you.
Beautiful.
No ticket, no
money. That's a joke in and of itself.
Yeah, it is. And of course, one that I keep forgetting after all these years, no ticket, no laundry.
That's true. A lot of youngsters out there have no idea what you're talking about when you say that, but I do, unfortunately.
Now, I noticed the one that you did put in there that really caught my attention right off the bat. All models over the age of 18. So you are 2257 compliant on that one, right?
Hey, brother, I'm dotting I's and crossing T's, you know what I mean?
Well, I saw that, and the first thing that popped in my head is, yep, that's Adam Pearce. Because it's a sense of seriousness built in with a sense of self-deprecation, which is something that you have really conveyed throughout every time you've come on the show, which I believe the count now is officially up to 5, right?
Sounds about right to me. What I should have said was all models above the age of 18, or at least that's what they said.
There you go. That works. We do not have to ID yet. It's wrestling, not some... we'll leave that alone. Now... Nailing straight into it, two words popped into my head within the first few minutes, and they stayed in my head. Ambitious undertaking as it pertains to the entire project, the entire series, because you had everything in place with CWH, with Marquez and, or Dave Marquez, the producer and owner of Championship Wrestling from Hollywood out in Glendale with KDOC. And
Right. There
was a comfort zone technically because you knew that building. Cabana knows that building. Marquez knows that building, the Glendale studios that you were operating out of. But to move outside of the Glendale studios and to use the old expression, take it on the road. What exactly, first off, what time of day did you actually come to the realization that you wanted to try to take this out on the road? And when you first started looking at the idea of different cities, what was the mindset involved?
You know, that part of the whole process was actually really simple. You know, I guess the motivation for trying to do that and throwing that out there to begin with was to basically see if we could solidify people within the NWA to work together, you know, get behind one singular angle and see if we couldn't make it a force in every promotion. I mean, obviously, for years and years, that was the way you did it, particularly with the National Wrestling Alliance. That was the whole premise behind having the traveling champion, and then building a series of challengers for them throughout the various territories. In this case, I thought it was an easy sell to have Cabana as that babyface, the Dusty Rhodes to my Harley Race, if you will, just out of sheer popularity and the notoriety that he had achieved on his own. And obviously the relationship between us over the years made it that much easier in terms of selling us as a package, because people were already having a semblance of what would come. So that was the easy part. The promoters themselves were all people that both Cabana and I were comfortable with and had worked with throughout the past 10 or 15 years. And once they got a sense of what we were trying to do, it was an easy sell. In fact, I don't think there was anybody who said no of the people that we initially went out to try and make this thing happen. I mean, I know it sounds crazy in the wrestling business to have cooperation between promoters, but I tell you, it was that part of it right there. I mean, that came together so quick. It was almost a no-brainer, and I'm almost shocked to say that today, but it was.
I want to know where you've got the camera inside of Studio One right now, because you just actually took my fifth question right out from under me when you mentioned Dusty Rhodes and Harley Race. You actually, I kid you not, you did. Because as I surveyed the situation then, I compared Colt Cabana to a 2011, 2012 equivalent to Dusty. He was the likable, happy-go-lucky, who could turn on the seriousness, but everybody knew him more as the more lighthearted individual.
Sure.
I compare you to Harley Race, but also a hybrid between Race and Flair to a degree, because you do have your flamboyant side as far as, you know, making the appearance. But when it comes down to it inside the ring, you work from a very grounded technical base, but you're also not afraid to go to the air. And
sure.
I saw that, and that comparison really just started to hit me a while back, and watching the way things came together in several levels. You know, catching some of the footage of the different matches as they transpired throughout that calendar year, I'm going, they've recreated Race Rhodes all over again. Because whether it be in the southeastern U.S., whether it be in the West Coast, when Adam Pearce is being Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, he is the one fans love to hate. Plain and simple. They know that you are the defining heel in that circumstance, except for when the setup occurred that everybody will find out when they see the DVD. And I'm referring to the Family Stone.
Right.
And so I'm going to leave that part alone. But how do you feel when you actually, you mentioned it first, but I'm following it up the way that I did. When you hear somebody making the comparison between Pierce Cabana and Rhodes Race, what goes into your mind when you hear that?
I mean, obviously that's a huge compliment. You know, I think for me personally, anyway, over the last 5 or 6 years, that's usually the comparison I get. Is I always get Harley Race and young Steve Austin, and I always say the Austin part's obviously because probably the bald head and the goatee. But to be compared to anybody of that caliber, I mean, come on, it's crazy, at least from my perspective, crazy to even think that. But I'm going to take the compliment. And I think that speaks to the kind of dichotomy that myself and Cabana have as performers, and just that pure heel babyface feel. You know, it's very easy to latch on to that because it's simple, raw human emotion. And I mean, I think that's what made Race and Rhodes great as well. You had the very, very defined character roles that each one played, and played to a T. And I think that's a lot of what Cabana and I were able to do.
You openly mention in the DVD the Shane Douglas incident with the National Wrestling Alliance World Heavyweight Championship belt. From a personal and a professional standpoint, personal first, what did that incident mean to you?
You know, looking back on it, what was that, 94?
I think so.
You know, I was still at that point so new to the independent wrestling scene, and I really had no idea of what that meant and what that entailed and what kind of slap in the face that was to so many different people. But looking back on it now, having been involved in the business now going on 20 years, you know, I mean, you walk in a man's shoes before you judge him. And I've had the opportunity to work with Shane Douglas. And, you know, I haven't really picked his brain about that because everyone makes their own decisions and whatnot. But I will say this, that I did an angle with him in Winnipeg a couple of years ago where I ended up laying him out with that belt and cutting this huge promo about how disrespectful and blah, blah, blah it was. And he was as eager to put me over in that sense and go along with it as anyone has been for anything I've done. And I don't know that fans would necessarily think he would do that just based on what they think they know. So I got a lot of respect for Shane Douglas. And again, without having walked a mile in his shoes or knowing what the lay of the land was in the National Wrestling Alliance at that point, it's hard for me to cast stones considering what it ended up happening at the end of Seven Levels. So it is what it is, and obviously it's a polarizing thing. But I have kind of a unique perspective on things now, so I don't know that I'm as quick to vilify Shane Douglas as maybe some are.
It's been called the 10 pounds of gold. You call it Sweet Charlotte. Those are two phrases that have been used to describe the current and most popular incarnation of the NWA belt. Tell me first, in all honesty, what did that title represent to you when you won it the first time? And October 21, 2013, what does it mean to you today?
You know, I think the easiest way to answer that question, and I know we're on an audio medium, but if you could look above my fireplace, you'd see it hanging, and it's still there. You know, the 10 pounds of gold that I wore for the majority of my reigns as NWA champion was gifted to me after my third reign by the National Wrestling Alliance, and it's in a shadow box, and it's above my fireplace. And it's probably the most important piece of my wrestling life, period. And always will be. It's the Godfather to all my wrestling championships. It's my Sweet Charlotte. I named it that because I love her, and I always will.
When the Seven Level series started, we had seen Best of Seven championship series done in pro wrestling and in sports entertainment promotions, but nothing to the level that encompassed technically seven cities, five promotions, actually six, I apologize, with seven different stipulations. When you first put the plan to paper to consider it, what did you feel the possibility was that it would fly as well as it did?
You know, I was confident in the people we were working with. And you know, once you have the support of the promotion staff and the people who are actually on the ground floor in those towns putting the shows together, I mean, and we in Cabana really had the easy part. We just had to show up and perform. So I didn't think there was ever going to be a problem considering the people we were working with and the buzz that was happening in their towns just when things were initially being mentioned to their fans. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, seven different stipulations, but none of them were, you know, foreign necessarily to Cabana myself. So it's not like we were walking into something we'd never done before. We were just doing it in different spots, really. And it was fun. It was great. And I think it varied what we had to do. I mean, it's, you know, if you're wrestling the same guy 100 times and you have the same match 100 times, and by the time you get to that last one, you're sick of it. And I think it let us have some variety and kept things fresh. And more than that, for us anyway, kept it fun.
Outside of Dave Marquez of NWA Hollywood, or excuse me, Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, NWA Hollywood at the time, who gave you the most encouragement, and also who offered up the most trepidation about the project and why?
Again, I mean, I think it's crazy to think back. I mean, there was zero trepidation. We didn't have any snafus. Well, actually, I take that back. One of the matches was supposed to be for Greg Price at the Fan Fest in Charlotte. That would have been, what, 2011? And he fell, whatever year it was that he ended up canceling the entire Fan Fest, we had to move that match, which would have been in Charlotte. And luckily, Jeff Manning in Portland came through, and we ended up having that in Oregon. So that was really the only hiccup. But that said, there was zero trepidation. Everyone that was on board that we went through and contracted this thing for was behind it. And like I said, I don't think anybody was really worried about making their money back. In fact, quite the opposite, which is awesome.
Now, at that time, Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, KDOC, Glendale, Los Angeles, California, the second largest media base in the continental United States, New York being one, LA being two. With the product that was being put out at the time, there were people up and down the internet, myself included, and the rest of my crew here at Beyond Ringside included at that point in time during that chapter, were wondering what it would take to get a syndication deal for CWH. Now, the way that I'm looking at putting seven levels in play, having the initial chapter there, noting the fact that our conversations about this had taken place before the emergence of ROH on the Sinclair Group, what strides do you feel could have taken place or should have taken place for CWH to broaden their base and media presence to help the not only help the kickoff of seven levels, but help to expand the NWA brand at that time?
I think a lot of that assumes that there was a desire on the part of Championship Wrestling from Hollywood to grow beyond LA. And frankly, there wasn't. Marquez had tried that a number of times in a number of different iterations from 2008 going forward, trying to get the NWA brand to get behind and support a national, quote-unquote, television product. And quite frankly, it failed every time. And there's a lot of blame to go around for that. And I think Dave, having found a niche with KDOC in L.A. and finding the right numbers and the fan base growing in L.A., figured that's good enough for me, and I'm not going to waste my money, time, and effort trying to make something happen across the country for people that weren't necessarily going to carry their end of it. And that's just me speaking for myself. Now Dave has done some other things, and there's MAV TV and whatnot, but it's a different landscape and a different time. But at the time, he was completely confident and comfortable in saying, we're going to keep this in L.A., and we're going to keep the money in L.A., and we're going to do it our way and not have to answer to anybody else. And I supported that 100% at that point.
On and off the record, and of course at this phase it's on, one of the conversations that you and I had in previous days, as well as conversations that I've had with other people involved in situations with the National Wrestling Alliance at that time, in that chapter, felt that there was a slight tug, or tug of war, to use that expression, between the East Coast and the West Coast. Trobich and Barons being on the East, Marquez being on the West, and the little bit of a... You had some champions that were based out of the Eastern U.S. You had some champions technically based out of the Western U.S. Did you ever feel that there was a tug of war at that point?
No. The reason why I say that is because I think there's a misconception. There was one champion based out of the West, me.
Right.
The problem with labeling me a West Coast guy is that I do less than 10% of my work on the West Coast.
Right.
So, to me, that never made any sense. And to people who were labeling me a Marquez guy, and there were guys that did that a lot, I mean, I can't tell you how badly that pissed me off more than anything else. Again, if you looked at my schedule and the volume of dates I was doing as NWA champion, and then cross-reference it with who I was doing them for, Dave was at the bottom of the list. I showed up for TVs, that's it. And any of the political infighting and all that shit that was going on, pardon my French, was simply a waste of breath. And it's irritating. Obviously, you can hear it in my voice.
Yes, I can.
Even irritating to this day.
In the DVD, one of the statements made by Dave Marquez is, quote-unquote, Adam Pearce is the guy to carry the championship on television. Professional feelings aside, how does that statement hit you as a person?
It feels good, partly because I believe it. Especially for the majority of the time that I had it, and it's no secret. Dave would be a friend of mine until I'm dead, wrestling or non. So anytime you get somebody who's got faith in you, it feels good. Absolutely.
I've got to ask the question: when it came down to the KOD, when it came down to the taping or the show at CWH, where Cabana took the title, and he said the first round's on him, and the milkman came out and started, I'm trying to remember the exact, I think it was like over 60 or 200 quarts of chocolate milk ran it out.
Oh, God, it was more than that. It was like 500 at least.
What was the shock factor and the reaction that you saw and that you felt when the chocolate milk was being handed out?
I don't think there was any shock. As I said in the movie, the people were ready for it, man. The energy in the building was perfect. It was an exact culmination at the right point, at the right time, with the right people in the right place. And I think the respective buzz and the aftermath in terms of attention and notoriety and the respect, and I think that's the big word, the respect that the NWA had at that point, doing it that way, speaks to that. You know, it was what you want to do when you're writing a story and you want it to culminate at a high, because it absolutely did. I mean, it was a great moment.
You know, I came up with a phrase after the first year this show was back on, that Beyond Ringside was back on. The phrase is opportunistic marketing. Do you think that type of marketing, taking advantage of every opportunity, taking advantage of any opportunity, is lost in pro wrestling in this day and age?
I think it's lost in business. I don't think it's limited to wrestling. I mean, again, man, when the iron is, when you strike? You strike when it's hot. You know what I mean? When it's hot is when you hit it. And I don't think that's limited to wrestling. I think that's any business, right? So, I mean, obviously you can point to a million instances in wrestling where you think, you know, the people are hot for one thing, and then for whatever reason, promoters or promotions or whatever get in the way, and you know, you miss opportunities. And certainly we discussed a lot of that in the movie. But yeah, I'm not sure that's necessarily relegated strictly to wrestling.
Now, a loaded question. How do you feel the phrase applies to Seven Levels, the DVD itself?
The DVD itself?
Yeah.
Huh. Not sure. I never thought about it. What do you mean?
Taking advantage of an opportunity to get the right sides or the most sides of a story out. When in this day and age of the internet, you've got opinions flying coast to coast in a matter of seconds. You've got the Twitter wars and the Facebook war of words. And you've got all the he said, she said stuff.
Right.
And the way that I look at the documentary is the factor of these are our words from our mouths from that point in time. This is what we were trying to do. This is what happened. And this is how we try to set the situation straight. So let there be no doubt, yes, we're taking advantage of this opportunity off of a great 7-match series, but we're also going to take the time to clear the air and set the record straight from our perspective.
Yeah, I think there's obviously some truth to that. You know, although it wasn't like we had the 7 matches and then it was like, damn, let's jump off this and sell a DVD. I mean, it just didn't happen like that. And I think if there were more than one person, you know, in control besides me with a faster turnaround on things, I mean, I would have got the thing out a lot faster than I did. So in terms of opportunistic marketing, I think it would have been great to have been able to, you know, do what we did in Australia after the 7th stage and then the next day have a DVD to release. That might have put sales through every roof possible. But, you know, we did the way we did it the way we could, and I handled things as best I could, and it's out there. Now people can see it. If they have, I'm sure there's people out there who still have no idea who might be curious. So it's there for the taking.
I want to take a sidestep for a minute and break away from the current topic. And I want to go to something that started a little bit. It set you on your heels for a little bit, and you felt that you needed to set the record straight, for which I respect and commend you the way you did it. And I'm addressing the furor from the fan bases, multiple fan bases, when you made an appearance on Impact Wrestling.
Sure.
There were, myself included, a great number of people who thought that you would be and still could very easily be a viable asset to the Impact Wrestling roster. However, in my eyes, I also see every window can be a positive window. And not many saw that logic.
Right.
But being able to gain a window on a national forum like that, regardless of the long-term television outcome, but just that window itself, what did that mean to you?
You know, that was interesting. I think that was for me anyway, it was interesting to really look at and get a sense of A, what wrestling fans know versus what they think they know. And I don't mean that as a slight or a knock, but it was evident to me in the hours after I made the appearance the first night on Impact. number one, the kind of support that I got was amazing. But number two, God, so many people don't get it. Just don't get it. The window is always positive. In fact, I'll ask you, I don't know if you've been paying attention. Do you know where I was yesterday?
I have not been on Facebook today.
Okay, well, let's just say I was at a pay-per-view yesterday. So, yeah, like, there is no negative in what happened with Gut Check. Now, I'm not going to dismiss the idiocy that I think the Gut Check angle is and was. Yeah. Thank God it's over.
$200 t-shirt.
Right. But, you know, that entire process, which is obviously, if you paid attention to my Twitter feed, is still ongoing, has been nothing but positive for me. And I think that, again, and I said it, you know, in written form way back when, remember that what you're watching isn't reality. God, it's sometimes it's so frustrating.
San Diego Chargers football is reality.
We think.
Okay, in the post-LT era, we'll go, or post-LaDainian era, we'll work on that. I live in the state of Alabama. Right now, for us, Crimson Tide football is the ultimate reality show, unless, of course, you wear orange and blue for Auburn University, our cross-state rival.
Exactly.
Yeah. And everybody talks to me about different reality shows and whether or not I'm watching a certain one put on by a certain national independent sports entertainment organization. It's like, no, I'd rather watch Sunday Night Football and see Carrie Underwood in short shorts.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, it's funny to even now still get messages from people who tell me, boy, TNA really missed the boat when they passed on you. And I just kind of shake my head and I go, I mean, what year is it? Is it 19? If it's 1983, I understand the comment. But it's not, guys. But they're playing a role, brother. I mean, it's great. And I don't want to come off as if I don't appreciate the sentiment, because I do. And I think there's actually, when you strip it down to brass tacks, there's a lot of merit to what the fan bases were saying then and saying now. And I get that, and that really, honest to God, warms my heart. But at the same time, you know, you show up and do what you're paid to do, and you collect your paycheck at the end of the day, and you're grateful. And if you do good business by people and treat them the right way, they'll come back and do business with you again. And that's just how the world works, including pro wrestling, which, I hate to burst the bubble, but if reality TV ain't real and pro wrestling ain't real, then a reality TV segment on a pro wrestling show sure as hell ain't real.
Now, I want to get your side on this, or your input on this. I have said, and I've received quite a bit of flack from people, both, you know, casual fans and smart fans, but fans in general. When I make the comment that, and you have to remember, okay, I'll pop the bubble here. I'm 47 years of age.
Right.
And so I remember when the T word was actually functional and useful to a great degree, territory. I personally refer to the E and Orlando as the two largest independent pro wrestling promoters. Do you agree or disagree?
I don't see any reason to disagree with that.
Because they're just, the one in Stanford just has a multi-million dollar budget, but they still have the same roster that an independent show would. Granted, the world is their stage to a great degree, just like the one based out of Orlando, Nashville. But
sure,
they're not really running a quote-unquote territory, right?
No, the territory system hasn't been around in for years. I don't disagree with you at all. I wonder why people would. What are they reading into it that I'm not seeing?
I'm still trying to figure that one out, too. How can you call them an indie promoter? It's like, because they have their own roster and they're not really doing anything in any set area. They don't have defined borderlines. Their defined borderlines are Monday night for 3 hours, Thursday night for two, or Friday night for two, and whatever else. But no, I find it amazing that I still get flack about that every once in a while from people, and I wanted to get your input on that.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way to put it, that their territories are not necessarily relegated to any physical position on the planet. rather to a time slot on a network. I think that is probably the most accurate way to look at how wrestling, quote-unquote, territories would work today. And they're obviously independent. You know, I mean, everyone's independent. So I don't know what the argument with that word is. Although I think the preconceived notion and the connotation that people have come to associate with the words indie wrestling is sometimes baffling and mind-boggling. But it is what it is.
Coming back into it for a second, the phrase, and this is expounding on one that I spoke to you about earlier. The phrase attributed to the Hollywood lifestyle is, what I'd really like to do is direct. Knowing that you have done some production in your past, at casting the role of producer, but to my knowledge, not to this type of level. What did it mean to you when you put the final product of the documentary in the can and had it ready to go to press?
Well, I mean, I've produced TV for ROH and for Championship Wrestling for Hollywood for years, so just to say that directly, I obviously know what the hell I'm doing, but in terms of doing the DVD, again, it was a one-man show, largely. I did have my editor, my finish editor at the end, Louis Benson, came in and made my chicken shit into an edible chicken salad and made it pretty with graphics and whatnot at the end, but, you know, for the large majority of the project, 95% of it anyway, it was me. So once it was done and ready to go to print, so to speak, relief. Thank God this journey is over.
Give me your definition of the word reinvention as it pertains to individual and storylines in the creative process.
You know, I don't know that I would. I agree with that. I don't know that I think we reinvented anything. I think we took what works in storytelling and just applied it to wrestling, which, hell, that used to be a novel concept. The concepts of heel and babyface, and taking out of wrestling terms, good versus evil, that's the oldest story on planet Earth, and one that's very easy to tell when you keep it simple, stupid, instead of delving off into 100 million directions. I have a very simplistic and traditional wrestling mind in that sense. I feel like pro wrestling works best when it's two people, one good, one bad, fighting over a specific issue that becomes emotional and leads to combat. It's very simple, and I think sometimes that's lost on people.
Then let me go ahead and redirect the question. I would like to ask you to define the term reinvention as it pertains to an individual in pro wrestling, creatively speaking.
You're going over my head, man.
As in they reinvent.
What are you asking me? Spit it out.
Well, you look at situations involving different people in pro wrestling where they have a certain persona or a certain characterization about themselves. And then as time goes by, they alter that, or they accent another part of their personality, or they change their personality, i.e. reinventing themselves.
Talking about Cabana?
Yeah.
You know, I think that's also something else that I'm particularly proud of in the series itself. The notion that Cabana the comedy guy, to me, is completely short-sighted. Now, of course, I know that. I was there from the very beginning of his training and have seen him progress and mature as a performer in varied circumstances and in different situations, both on the independents in the Midwest and onto Ring of Honor. And then obviously he went into the WWE system for a while and then came back out, back to Ring of Honor under my direction, which I had to book at that time. And then throughout the 7-Level series itself and other NWA stuff that I was a part of and that he was on as well. I mean, I know what he as a performer is capable of. And I also know, being the architect largely of the series and of the story arc, the situations that I like to see him in, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
And I think the series allowed him to kind of not reinvent himself at all, because he's already got the tools, rather expose to people who haven't seen him in those situations just how deep he can go and how far away from comedy he can get and be credible at the same time. I could beat the Colt Cabana drum all night long because I'm such a big fan of him. I think he's easily one of the most varied performers out there, and it's sad to me almost that most fans only see him one way. And it's my hope that through the movie and the matches themselves, as a part of the discs, as a part of the set, that people get to see a side of him that, for whatever reason, very few have had a light shed on for him. So I'm a huge fan of Cabana. Absolutely.
Now, this is almost going to sound like a redundancy, but this is the way that I wanted to ask the question as it pertains to what you just answered. During Seven Levels, we saw an evolution of Colt Cabana, going from more the happy-go-lucky type of individual to a more focused and more determined type of professional wrestler. Was that one of your secret goals in this series, to bring out a deeper side of Colt and to give him and his fans an outlet to explore other facets of his personality?
You know, maybe indirectly, but honestly, that's part of the story arc, you know, and there's got to be layers to things, I think, if you're going to tell an effective story. And I'm glad that you asked that question, because that tells me that you were picking up what we were putting down, so to speak. You know, it's like any great World Series, you know, the protagonists and the antagonists have different levels of confidence, and those things are destroyed at some point or challenged, and then you persevere and you come through, and that whole type of struggle, that internal battle between the two, man, we wanted to take people on a roller coaster of emotions, hopefully on both sides of that good versus evil dynamic. And the fact that you asked that question tells me that, at least in terms of Cabana himself, we were able to convey that gamut of emotions that was taking place throughout the series, and I'm glad that you saw it.
Well, I was able to see on your side of the board as well, because this is something that you and I've discussed on more than one occasion on this show. I've brought up different facets of Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, whether it be, you know, the cocky, arrogant champion, guess what, you ain't taking my toys, or kind of like the Tony Stark style, don't take my stuff. Or you've got the other persona that I think was during the first interview that I actually brought up, was Pierce Texas Ranger.
Right.
And, yeah, I'm still not going to let you forget it. And we see, for those who have followed your career to a certain degree, we see those sides of you. But in Seven Levels also, especially when you laid out the challenge, single cam, half lit, the graphics coming across the screen at strategic points, the music in play, that was a dramatic side, and it almost showed I'm not threatening you, I'm guaranteeing you that one of us will never be the same after this. And I actually put that one up for Oscar consideration, if that's okay with you. But
I appreciate it. I think, and this may go over wrestling fans' heads somewhat, and hopefully it doesn't, but I think there's an extremely powerful strength in vulnerability. And I don't see enough of that in pro wrestling. If that makes any sense.
It does, actually, because in that promo, I believe the way that I first saw it, because I remember when you first put it up on YouTube and posted it on Facebook and linked it on your Twitter, actually primarily Facebook, I saw a silent but vocal determination, but at the same time I saw a silent but less verbose desperation in the way you came across in that.
We're tugging at different heartstrings, right? We're trying to, obviously, I mean, all of this is a sales pitch to try and drive people to the box office or to buy a DVD or whatever. So you want to, you know, as a performer, dial in to whatever, number one, the stories you're trying to tell, but do it in a way that allows people to gravitate towards that in a real and tangible and emotional way. Can we get people to relate? Period. I think the strongest storylines, not just in wrestling, but on any television show and sports, are those that the everyday, you know, John and Jill, or Jack and Jill, whatever the hell names you want to use, they can relate to it. What can we relate to, and why? Those are the things that people invest in emotionally, monetarily, you know, whatever you're going for. And again, I think that good versus evil story, just the interaction between Cabana and myself made that so much easier to do.
Yeah, I believe that a mutual friend of ours, Bill Barron, said it perfectly one time during an interview here on Beyond Ringside back a few years ago, when he just simply said, "Give me something to believe in."
That's it.
Yeah. And that simple psychology, and I'll say this about on the national scale, 7 days a week, it is so lost. But yet you come down to, and I'm using that phrase so loosely here, you come down to the independent level, to the shows that take place on a local or state level, and they understand, a lot of promoters and a lot of wrestlers/workers understand the concept of, yes, we know that's what we need to do and that's what we're trying to do. But unfortunately, on the national scene with the so-called Big Two, they seem to have gotten so far lost in trying to push the forced drama where they don't let it become, or where they've forgotten how to let it be organic in the way that it builds. And that was something that I've seen in the Pierce Cabana feud, was the fact that you put the building blocks in play, but by your own admission, you took the time, you made the investment, you wanted to go long form with it, and you let it build and escalate in an organic manner, and the crowd came along for the roller coaster ride, right?
You know, that was the desire, and I think largely we were able to achieve that. You know, wrestling on television today is a much different beast than it was when you were a kid or when I was a kid. I mean, the things that you and I grew up loving about professional wrestling simply do not exist in today's television products. And I'm not saying that's good, bad, or indifferent. I'm just saying that it is. Are you ever going to get a legitimate 10 or 11-month storyline or feud, quote-unquote, on TV? No. And to those who would point out and say John Cena versus The Rock had a one-year build, I'd like to see what the build was.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, things that happened like every 3 months, that's not building anything to me.
Nope.
You know, but again, that's different strokes for different folks, and I'm not saying that what they did was good, bad, or indifferent. And when you look at the buy rates and the money that WrestleMania did that year, you know, I mean, obviously something's working. It's just not something that necessarily makes my palate happy, if that makes sense.
I'm going to hit thin ice on this question. There seemed to be something more that you wanted to say when it came to the factor of the NWA title being taken off of Colt after the win in 2011, reverting over to the Sheik.
Something more that I wanted to say?
It seemed like you were holding back, that something was missing in what you were saying.
Well, enlighten me. What do you think I was holding back?
I think you were actually trying to stay a little bit more professional for the camera.
Probably smart. He's probably a very intelligent person. My go-to line on that is, we only had so many minutes available on the DVD. I couldn't put everything in. And more pointedly, in specific to that, that scenario and that entire situation that was happening, well, that wasn't just relegated to me. I mean, I still have hours of footage on that specifically. And if the story was about that or more about that than what it ended up being, I could have probably used some of that. But, yeah, I think I said in the movie, some things make sense, but that didn't make any goddamn sense. Still don't, by the way.
You're right. Because that was one of the parts, because when you had the situation with the Sheik, and I'll leave that name at that. And when he did what he did with the title, and Craig Classic comes on board, well, I'm going to step down as junior heavyweight champion. Because there was a Tuesday night show that Craig Classic came in first, and you came on board second. And when you and I had the discussion about the direction that Craig was going to, because I didn't know exactly which way Craig was wanting to go, because it's just like with every interview that I do. I have a direction that I want to take the interview, not necessarily to spin positive, but to spin real.
Right.
I don't want, like I said, I don't believe in forced drama. I believe if somebody wants to open up about a subject, they're going to open up about the subject. If they want to start getting out of control on it, I'm going to mute the mics and I'll stop tape. And I'll say that on air and off air, just like I'm saying it right now. And that was something that, and I know that in the direction where you were, I lost myself for a second, bear with me. But remembering that timeline, I knew that there was so much more that Bill Barons wanted to say, that Bob Trowbridge wanted to say, and deep down I knew that I thought that there was something else that you wanted to get to just enlighten the world with, but I knew that when you just said what you said a minute ago, yeah, that pretty much put it in perspective because it really didn't make sense. And it made less sense for Craig to do what he did. I'm sure he felt he had his reasons, but to walk away from a situation the way that he did, and it still puzzles me to this day. But
I think the way I look at that now isn't very different than the way I looked at it then. People have their own ways of dealing with things, and some are better than others, obviously. And some leave you scratching your head, and there's a lot about that to this day and going forward. I think that a lot of people are still going to kind of be going, "Huh, what the hell?" And really, that's the reaction I have to this day. What the hell? But it is what it is, man.
Now, coming back over to Colt for a second, one of the phrases that I've heard and personally used when it comes to describing Colt Cabana in ring is fun to watch. Give me your definition of what fun to watch is, and no, you can't say Colt Cabana is that definition.
Yeah, because that's exactly where I thought we were going with that. I think anybody who has the ability to get people on board, and what I mean when I say that is, if you are able to draw a legitimate emotional reaction from people, there's got to be some kind of innate charisma or something in your performance that's allowing you to do that. And just speaking directly about Cabana, he has this ability through his body language mostly. To get people to come on a roller coaster ride with him. There's a congeniality, if you will, in his performances that people naturally want to have a good time, and he is the easy catalyst for that. You know, I think that's awesome, and I think that's missing in a lot of our professional wrestling, particularly in the States here, are characters like that, that people just genuinely want to have a good time with. You know, you think about your Dusty Rhodes of the past, or even guys like a Coco Beware. There is a place in pro wrestling for that feel-good guy, that's fun to watch. You know, your Bushwhackers even. There's a place for that.
Yep.
In pro wrestling. And that's it. Listen, anytime I see kids jumping up and down and laughing and screaming and clapping and having a good time, whatever the performer is or whoever that person is that those people are reacting to, are doing the right thing, and that's fun to watch for me, you know. And again, being the other side of that coin, if I'm working with a performer that has the ability to do that, I also know that when it's time to turn the heat up on that performer, I'm going to have the direct opposite and desired reaction from the very same people when it's time to turn that emotion on upside down. It makes for such an easy performance, or an easier performance, I should say, than it would with someone who maybe isn't as connected. And obviously that's a lot less fun.
Going back to the series for a second, choosing LA, of course, obvious for level one, kick it off at home. What were some of the, we've talked about some of the other cities. Noting that at that point in time, Tennessee, Florida, Georgia, the southeastern U.S., had some strong NWA promotions during the existing regime of the NWA. What led you away from coming to the Southeast with that?
Scheduling. Nothing but scheduling. I know Bill Barons had his druthers. We would have been down there. It was just simply, you know, logistics had to line up too. And the dates that promoters were running had to cross-reference to connect with both myself and Cabana's schedule, which is varied, and obviously he comes from a different part of the country than I do. And so, you know, desire notwithstanding, the actual sitting down with a calendar and being able to line everything up had to make sense too. And you know, I mean, there would have been some great places to go and some obvious places to go that we couldn't simply for that. And I think the Southeast is one of those places.
Now, I know it's mentioned on the DVD, but during, I believe it was your third appearance on here. No. Yeah. The site, and this was when all the hullabaloo started taking place, for lack of a better word that I can use on a PG environment.
That's a great word.
What was the deciding factor to go across the pond to Australia?
You know, it really came down to, you know, when the decision was made by the NWA that we weren't going to be able to finish that thing up in L.A. It came down to finding a promoter that was going to be able to do it within the time frame that we were working with. Again, it's not like we had open schedules and could just pick whatever day we wanted. We were pretty limited at that point and locked in into what was available, again, with me and Cabana's schedules being busy and varied. You know, it just ended up lining up well with promoter Ben Gilbert down in Melbourne. And he had the date. It wasn't the exact date. I think it was a week removed from what it was going to be, but luckily we were able to switch a couple things around, and it wasn't too far out of the realm of possibility for either one of us, Cabana or myself, to do that. And once that was easy and we were able to get the date matched up, then it was just down to coming up to the, you know, get the finances to make it happen, and he had people on the ball that were able to do that. And again, I think, and I said it in the movie, again, there's another example of, you know, you want to talk about making chicken salad out of, you know, chicken bleep. Here it is, you know, the 11th hour, stage 7 of this thing, the final game of the World Series, if you will, knowing that we aren't going to be able to end this thing the way we wanted to, and we still added an international element to it that I'm not sure they deserved. But we had a hell of a time.
Logistically speaking, and there's our favorite word of the year, what could have made or would have made Seven Levels even more successful than it was?
Oh, man, I think in a perfect world, had it gone down exactly as it was, you know, conceived, it would have been awesome, I think, for everybody involved. And that doesn't, you know, I don't mean that strictly for Cabana. I mean that for the entirety of the NWA. You know, at least what was left of it at that point.
Right.
At least left of the NWA that we were working with, anyway. You know, I mean, again, when you outline something and you're going long term on it with a slow build like we did, and we're talking about, you know, upwards of a year on this thing, and to have it come down and end so drastically different than what it was conceived is disappointing, but at the same time, perhaps not as compelling, and certainly maybe not as warranting a documentary as what happened. But at least, you know, in my mind's eye, anyway, as I see it, the way I put pen to paper and started lining this thing up, I mean, and who doesn't want to see the hero win the World Series in this Game 7, bottom of the ninth, two outs, and hit a home run? Who doesn't want to see that? You know? And that's what would have happened.
And here's the question of business logistics. If you consult your Magic 8-Ball and you ask, should the babyface win the final match or the blow-off match every time? And the Magic 8-Ball responds, reply hazy, try again later. What does that tell you?
I don't know. Go buy a new Magic 8-Ball.
There
again,
you go.
I'm simple, man. To me, and I don't. Again, I don't know. I like my movies the same way. I like my TV the same way. Good triumphs over evil. Period. You know. I think that's a huge reason why, when there was an attempt to make it the opposite, you know, and have evil win in a steel cage in Game 7. I mean, that's like, I don't know, that'd be like willingly giving myself an SPD. There's no way I could do it.
Or it would be the case of, let's just hypothetical, St. Louis beating L.A. in Game 7 of the NLCS in L.A. You've got a certain niche of fans in L.A. who actually are Cardinal fans, but that number is quickly eclipsed by, however, the hometown fans are going to look toward another chapter, i.e. see you next year. Now, did it, I'm sheer straight up question. Noting what you've just said in accord to what you said in the movie itself, inside the documentary itself, we live in an era now where it is finally that much more accepted to cheer the heel. Even if the heel is not trying to be the cool heel, but he's still a straight ahead ass. And did it even for one split second cross your mind that we can complete this to where Pierce stays in the game and Cabana comes back to fight another day?
You know, there are parts of the story, and I'm not going to skirt your question because I think it's relevant and I think it's a good question and there's an answer for it. The way I'll answer it is I'll say there were parts, points anyway, during the creative processes of this thing where we were unsure whether or not it was actually going to go seven. And the reasons for that, which aren't in the movie because, frankly, it's nobody's business, had to do with, you know, whether or not Cabana and or myself were actually going to be available on the independents in order to do so. There were a lot of things happening behind the scenes and in various places for the both of us during the bulk of this time that this series was being put together. We left it in a way, again, here's why I love simple booking. Because it's simple to change as well.
Right.
So you don't get too crazy with it. We could have changed it. People questioned, you know, the babyface win in the first three matches. Now, knowing what I just said to you, now you understand why.
Yes.
You know, and then when certain things maybe don't happen, then the heel comes back and it's 3-3 and you've still got that seven-game scenario. And I think, the frustration. Had it gone back to L.A. for the seventh match, where I get a very much, where I get a much bigger babyface response than other places, would have made for a very interesting seventh match in the sense that it would have been split. It would have felt like college football.
Right.
You know, it would have felt like Michigan, Ohio State with me and Cabana as opposed to, you know, 80-20 for Cabana. It would have been much closer to 50-50.
Right.
And then, you know, you get, there's a different emotion there too. So, yeah, I mean, there were things that were going on outside of the NWA drama, just in our own personal lives, that could have impacted things and changed things up. But it worked out the way it did.
We make the reference to the name Bill Behrens a couple of times. I brought him up. Noting what he said in the video itself, I want your personal definition of the term, the Kool-Aid of being champion.
Very simple. When you are a mark for yourself, and those that fall into that category simply just don't understand wrestling, or really, I mean, it's probably anything really in life. When you get to the point of arrogance to a detriment, that's drinking your own Kool-Aid, you know. The idea that being the champion of any promotion means anything. Again, the championship is a prop. And if you wake up tomorrow and if I woke up tomorrow and looked above my fireplace at the 10 pounds of gold and believed that I was the real, honest-to-goodness World Heavyweight Champion, I would implore somebody to show up in San Diego, California with a shotgun and put me out of my own and I'm sure everyone else's misery. Because that's exactly the attitude. If you really believe that shit... I don't have any place for it. Not as someone who's worked behind the scenes in wrestling or someone in the ring. I don't have any tolerance for that notion.
Your plans were kicked in the crotch on two separate occasions under two separate regimes.
I like the way you put that.
Thank
you. Absolutely.
Now, I'm going to ask the question. I want you to make the open comparison, but weigh both sides evenly. If that's possible, which tandem was more short-sighted? And I say this knowing the fact that all four individuals I still have a great rapport with up until this moment, Bill Behrens and Bob Trobich or Bruce Tarp and Chris Wonquillo?
Oh man, all things being equal, you know, I think about the reaction that the wrestling industry really gave the first title change from me to Cabana in 11, and just the outpouring of positive attention on the brand at that point. It's hard to, you can't ever recreate a moment, you know what I mean? So even as wonderful as you know, the seventh match series could have been and ended up being, I don't know that it ever would have touched the natural support, the organic support, the overwhelming support that that first title change got. And I don't want to, I don't know that it's fair to lay all the blame on, you know, just those people that you mentioned. You know, ultimately, though, somebody's got to make that decision. And I certainly don't think it was a good one then. I do respect it, although difficult to say that. I do respect it. You know, Bob Torbich deciding to change the belt to the Sheik, knowing the respect that he had for Eddie Schumann. Yep. And when you watch the movie, you'll get a sense of what that story is. One thing that I didn't say in the movie that I'll say here is I knew Eddie Schumann since I was 17 years old. So I still have a huge respect for everything that he was to me and also to his family. So I get it. I understand. I just think it was a poor decision at the absolute worst time. And that one still lines right up with the shitter for me and probably always will.
When you allow emotion to interact with business, what is the first thing that's compromised?
In wrestling?
Yes.
I mean, anytime, and I won't use the word emotion, I'll use the word ego. I think ego is the single biggest destroyer of anything positive in pro wrestling. Again, we are out there telling stories. We are not out there doing actual combat, and there are not, at least on the independent, quote-unquote, level of the wrestling business, there are not seven-figure dollar amounts that are changing hands based on this stuff. You know, we're out there largely trying to appease our own desire to perform more than anything else and deliver product to wrestling fans that may be different than what's on television. But the minute you open the door and allow ego to get in there and allow things to turn into a pissing contest, and then once that happens, then the emotion comes into play and the hurt feelings and the anger and the woe is me. I mean, it just turns into a literal soap opera over something that is supposed to be a cooperative. It just ruins it. It ruins it, and you know, I've seen my share of it, absolutely.
Colt, during the movie, brought up the idea of social networking and pro wrestling, especially as it pertains to his world. Of course, he's got a wildly popular podcast, The Art of Wrestling. He's got, you know, always fun to listen to and read stuff that he says on his Twitter feed. And, of course, going to the website and seeing some of the exploits and some of the other stuff that he posts. Now, something you and I have technically discussed before, but for the sake of this interview, put into perspective how you feel right now about the correlation and interaction of social media and professional wrestling. How much does it help? How much does it hurt? And where is the mind of Adam Pearce at when it comes to that?
I think it's a huge benefit in 2013 for anybody who's out there trying to sell themselves. And again, we are selling a product. Your performance, your persona, what you bring to an event, that is what you're selling. And social media allows you to really take that into your own hands. You know, you don't have to rely on somebody to sell you. You have the ability through these different mediums to do that yourself. Now, there's a way to do it, and there's certainly a way to piss people off using it. But for me anyway, specifically, the use of a Twitter and a Facebook and a YouTube channel serves to drive my business. It serves to drive what I'm trying to sell people, the T-shirts and the DVDs and the promoters you know, that I want to buy essentially my performance and put on their show, it's very easy to market it to those people using your Facebook, using your Twitter, using your YouTube. And I think those that aren't doing that in 2013 are really putting themselves behind an eight ball. And again, I'm not necessarily a huge fan of what the internet represents as a whole. And specifically to pro wrestling, I was never a fan of the message boards and you know, the dirt sheet, quote unquote, usage of the internet. But again, if you don't adapt and evolve with the times, and that's where we are in 2013, for better or worse, then you die. And just looking at the T-shirts that I've sold, I know that if I don't have internet presence, I probably don't sell damn near as many. In fact, I know that to be fact. So it's a tool. And like any tool, you have to be seasoned with it. You have to understand what it's used for and use it for that and kind of keep everything else off of there, if that makes any sense.
I have to ask, whose idea was I'm a scrap daddy girl panties?
All mine.
Okay.
All mine. I'm taking all the credit for it, and I'll take all the criticism for it as well. And it was born simply out of, so ProWrestlingTees.com, I think, is a great website. It's owned by a friend of mine, Ryan Barkin, out of Chicago, who also owns WildHourTees.com, which is a great company for T-shirts or anything else you want to print. And to that point, a lot of guys were just getting things printed on whatever. And I saw that some of the boys were getting, like, pillowcases and sheets and beach towels. And just in conversation one day with Ryan Barkin at WildHourTees, I said, has anyone done panties? And he kind of went, huh. And I said, can you do panties?
Uh-oh.
And he goes, well, yeah, we can print on anything. And I said, we're doing panties. Because name another wrestler who has panties.
I haven't seen them.
That's it, man. I said, if we sell 10 or 10,000, I don't care. We're the first.
Now, loaded question. This is completely off script and off anything that I was originally going to ask. Did Joey Ryan say anything about it?
No, but you would have thought that would be perfect for Joey.
Yes.
Right? For the persona. Why wouldn't he do that? I don't know. I'm sure, I don't know why he hasn't done it to this day.
I have no idea.
I will say this, and I'm not, read into it what you want. The vast majority of panty sales for me have been size XL and bigger.
So aren't you glad you didn't do them in a thong?
My man. And I like big butts, and I cannot lie.
You other brothers, but damn. Oh, I almost hate to ask this. I hate to go back into the serious questions we found this level. Speaking of another level of interviews, we're going to work on how many levels we've actually hit, so to speak. We may just do another tie-in. Okay, this one's going to hurt. And you're probably going to baseball bet me. What was your mindset about them at the time when the new ownership opted not to come on board and participate with Seven Levels to the degree that they did?
Disappointment. And still, I'm still disappointed. I think if there's a hole in the project and a hole in the movie, it's that. And I think, and again, I'm speculating because, well, hell, I don't have the footage to say otherwise, but I would assume that the main reason behind that, outside of the kind of canned statements that I was given, was that they felt like maybe they're going to get railroaded or whatnot, which, you know, I guess that's valid. They could think that, although I can tell you specifically, I wanted to tell as complete a story as possible and let the public make their decision. Of course, I have my opinion, and the people that did appear on camera have their own opinions
right.
to how things went down. And those opinions may or may not all be the same. And for those of you that watch the movie, you'll get a direct sense of what I think the natural emotion around the thing was. And it's not all that different than what the public emotion around it was either. But it would have been nice to have the differing perspective. It would have been nice to have, you know, some of the rumors corroborated one way or another. And at least something, you know, that's really disappointment's the word. I still see Bruce Tharp periodically. I still consider him a friend, and a lot of people find that odd. I don't. I think Bruce just made a decision to kind of step away from things, and I'm not happy necessarily with some of the partners that he's had along the way in his endeavors now at the National Wrestling Alliance, but those are his choices, and again, we all make our bed, and eventually we all sleep in it, and I hope he sleeps comfortably. I don't know if he will, but that's another story for another time. But yeah, disappointment. Would have been nice to have the other side of the coin more than what we had.
Yeah. October 18th, 2012, was the edict, in your opinion, a show of apathy from the state of Texas, or a show of no confidence that you couldn't, that you wouldn't do what the front office wanted you to do as champion?
I don't know. I mean, that's a question for them, I think, more than it is for me. They had their mind made up as to what they wanted to happen, and we had our minds made up as to what we were willing and unwilling to do, and it went on, and we did what we did. You know, I think that the important notion, at least for me personally, is that there were ways to get around it and compromise and make all parties happy or happier than they ended up being. And for whatever reason, it just didn't happen. But ultimately, they're the one driving the car, and I was the one holding the keys, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it does.
And they got their keys back.
Since the you've already made a reference to Bruce Tharp. Since the completion and release of the DVD set, what kind of, if any, communication have you had with Chris Wonquillo?
None. Zero. Since the movie has become available and been out there to market, not a peep.
What's your current, noting that he made numerous appearance, or of course he made the appearance on the DVD itself to offer up his perspective. What's your current relationship with Fred Rubenstein?
See him periodically. When he's refereeing for Ring Warriors or whatnot in Florida or on various things on the East Coast, I see Fred from time to time. Got nothing against Fred. You know, Fred was in a very interesting position as well, I think.
What about Bob Trobich and Bill Behrens?
I talk to them periodically as well. I mean, I think it's evident when you watch the movies
right. What
side people fall on. And, I mean, naturally, you would probably keep more in touch with that. I have nothing but respect for Bob. If I was to single out someone within the NWA and say that this person has done the most for me, I think it would be hard for me to argue against Bob, and for that I'm eternally grateful. And Bill, I was just in Georgia not too long ago, I think at the beginning of the month actually, and had some correspondence with Bill, so we talk from time to time.
Hindsight being 2020, do you personally wish that you had said or done anything differently with the DVD, with the documentary?
A little long for my taste. I could have cut about, if I would have ixnayed the Sheik stuff and the historical perspective of me and Cabana going way back 15 years ago, it probably would have saved about 20-25 minutes, which might make it easier for fans to digest. But the other side of that coin is, you know, you don't necessarily have as much perspective on things as you probably should to understand the frustration going forward with the with what ended up happening in the series. So that was kind of my executive decision to leave it all in. Outside of that, I mean, I don't know, technically speaking, if we could have had everyone shot in 1080i with Dolby Digital, it would have been great. But
yeah.
That said, I don't think you're going to find anything on the DIY level that touches what I put out.
No, you put out a good product, and I'm not saying that because you're here. I'm saying that because it's the truth. But I also will sit back and agree with you the fact that, okay, I'm going to agree with a facet of what you said. I believe that the backstory and the let's get acquainted period with Adam Pearce and Colt Cabana needed to be there. Because of the fact that if you just basically dive right in and say, this is this, this, and this, you're still going to have, well, you could have left the door. If you had not put it in there, you could have actually come back later with a more expansive DVD, including more of the real history with Adam Pearce, Colt Cabana, and that entire group. And I think that it would definitely be something that true wrestling fans who understand, Colt, you're going to love me for this, the art of wrestling and the art form of wrestling. Thank you, Wicked Nemesis, one of my tag team partners. They can understand the dynamic of the friendship and the business relationship between Adam Pearce and Colt Cabana and see where you were going with that all the way back to Sunday, March 6, 2011 at the Glendale Studios when Colt Cabana defeated Adam Pearce for the belt the first time. And the storyline that built up to that moment and everything that has taken place beyond that point. So yeah, in my humble opinion, leaving it in there was a great idea. It definitely gave you a solid building block to help tell the tale.
Right.
And this is what I call my 3-2. Bottom of the ninth, bases loaded. Here's your 3-2 pitch. Aside from the personal friendship, aside from the professional relationship, aside from the knowledge of his popularity in the IWC, the internet wrestling community, what stood out to you to convince you that Colt Cabana would be the perfect fit as the protagonist in this entire thing? Why Colt Cabana?
Well, I think everything you mentioned is obviously factors in that decision, but from my perspective, again, we're in the business of selling something. We're selling product, and ideally you want a product that people are going to buy, right? So first and foremost, looking at simple mathematics, if I have a wrestling card in, I'll throw a town out there, Brooklyn, New York.
Okay.
And it draws X amount, and then when you add Colt Cabana, it draws X amount. If that X amount with Cabana is greater than what it was previous, then you probably want Cabana on your show. That's just looking at mathematics. Beyond that, and getting into my personal affinity for him, I think all of the notoriety and all of the popularity and all of the connections in relationships that he's made on his own made him an ideal NWA champion. For the NWA, it was a perfect relationship. It was someone you could hang your hat on, somebody who wanted to be in the spot, somebody who more than wanted to be there, understood what it was supposed to mean and what it used to mean to be there, someone that I felt comfortable with understanding and knowing exactly how I feel about that championship and would do the same respect to it that I always tried to do. For me personally, he was the right guy for a number of reasons. Most important of all, he gets it.
What do you feel is the best description of the persona and the characterization, there's that word again, of Scrap Iron Adam Pearce in this era, epitomized October 21, 2013?
God, no idea. Couldn't tell you. That's for the fans to answer, man. You know, at the base level, if you ask me, I'm just a guy with tights and boots that shows up and does his job. I'm a lunch pail guy. I come to work.
How much fun do you still have in pro wrestling?
Not nearly as much as I should. And I laugh at that. I'm getting old, man.
Yeah, horse nuts.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
We're only as old as we feel, and after this last 2-week stretch, I feel pretty damn old, but give me a couple of weeks, I'll be 19 again.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's funny. Physically, chronologically, I am approaching 36 years on this planet. Mentally, I'm still probably right around 17 and a half. And physically, in nuts and bolts, I'm probably close to 70. So average that all up, and I still have a lot more fun than the next guy. But I could be having more.
Take this question and run with it however you want to. We take the business more seriously than we take ourselves, or vice versa?
I think it depends what you're doing in the business. If you're making a living on it and you're relying on it to pay your mortgage and your car note and your student loans and put food on the table for your kids, I think you need to take it and yourself a little bit more seriously. Sometimes, and I think I can confidently say that for me specifically, there are some days are better than others for me in that regard, but at the end of the day, pro wrestling for me is not a hobby. Pro wrestling for me is a vocation. It is a means to an end. And when I say that, I mean exactly what I alluded to a second ago. I use this and work in this field to basically function as a human being. I don't have an outside income, so I take it very seriously. And I think that comes through in the movie when we're talking about some of the business things. In trying to maximize and capitalize on momentum and opportunity in order to put as much dollar signs in the pocket. Because at the end of the day, business is for that. It isn't for patting an ego or patting yourself on the back or bragging to your buddies. It really comes down to the bottom line if you are, in fact, in it for that purpose, which I am. So I take it very seriously. But if you're not, you know, I mean, when I was 17 and just running the roads and doing county fairs and falling in love with this thing was very different. It wasn't as serious, and neither was I. I just think that perspective changes when necessity deems it.
I'm going to hit you with a loaded question, and this is the home run round. When everything took place and the video from Australia was made public on YouTube, I sent you an email asking if everything was okay. And you sent me a response going, "Why? Shouldn't it be?" I could read in what you were saying multiple messages. Everything from, "Hey, Texas," to the letters "F you ring a bell," to "Hey, Texas," to the letters "F you ring a bell." And actually a whole bunch more than just that, but for the sake of argument, I'm going to leave it at those. And a lot of people who follow you wonder where your mind was at that particular point, because the look that you had in your eye, and I don't know if you were just selling it perfectly or if you were sending the message to Texas about, "You pushed me out." Do you still feel pushed?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, you know, there's so much that could have gone into the movie that didn't. I think that footage, what happened at the end of that match, okay, when you look at, again, a signpost, and again, notoriety, exposure, visibility, all the things that I worked for 5 or 6 years of my life to bring to that title, on the way out, I brought in spades. You know, there was so much positive, I think, to be taken from that one specific moment, should the powers that be at that point had enough foresight to take what we were giving them and use it to get somebody else over. I mean, anybody with any wrestling experience, and I think that's the operative word, and it's different now, I hope it's different now for them than it was then. If there was anybody there that had half a brain, they would have jumped all over what we were doing, because again, and I think I alluded to it in the movie, it's not like they didn't know. They knew what was going to happen, we just didn't know what was going to be said. I think that's the beautiful thing about pro wrestling, is that the improv part of it is huge. And that's when the real emotion hits, and then what happens, happens. But it wasn't as if people were blind to what was going to happen. Haggis ended up getting the championship after that, but it was supposed to be Wayne. And I said to Fred Rubenstein, "If I'm you, I get Wayne in front of a camera now. You got a week. You got to get him in front of a camera now, have it in a can. As soon as this thing goes on YouTube, yours goes on YouTube. 10 seconds later, boom, piggyback off of this. And they did nothing. Nothing. Missed opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Missed opportunity.
Aside...
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, it didn't end the way any of us wanted it to, nor did it end the way it had to. There should still be a relationship going on, I think, with not just me, but with Cabana. And as I said a couple of minutes ago, I have had zero communication with really the one driving the bus in the NWA right now since this thing came out. None. Zero.
With the exception of July 21st at Metro Pro for the 2 out of 3 falls match, where, of course, you were sick as a dog.
Yeah.
In a 2 out of 3 falls match. Which was your favorite one of the series?
The third one. Stage 3.
I Quit match.
Yeah, the I Quit match in Minnesota. Yeah, it was just a good night, man. Good house. Real good house. Working for people that we cut our teeth for, you know what I mean? It was a comfortable place. A hot crowd. It was fun. And, you know, when you get to sit down and watch that one, it comes off real well. And I think we told a really interesting story. That's my favorite one.
I asked the question, what do you hope that fans of Adam Pearce take away from the documentary?
I just hope they're entertained more than anything. I hope they find it interesting. Specifically fans of me, I mean, I don't know. That hell, we actually do know what we're doing.
How dare you insult us like that?
I don't know.
Do we know what we're doing? Hell no, we don't know what we're doing. We just, there's a wall there. See if it sticks sometimes.
Right. Welcome to wrestling.
There you go. Wrestling 101. Now, as it stands right now, the DVD, of course, there were 2 levels available. The VIP package, which has been long since sold out. And I don't know if you plan on trying to bring back something of that ilk to where you can get that another top-tier package going again. But how are the sales going for the full edition?
Quick. Going fast. I reordered. I put a tweet out, I don't know, a couple hours ago. I had to do a reorder because I was back-ordered and sold out. And I got my shipment in. And now I have less than 100 copies in my hand again. So, you know, the thing has surpassed pretty much every expectation that I had for it, which is a good thing, or a bad thing, depending upon if you like putting postage on envelopes. but, yeah, man, you're never going to get a complaint out of me for this. This is obviously a labor of love for a lot of people, probably more so myself than everybody else. And it's been amazing. And I would love to bring the signature edition back, but that means I'd have to pay Cabana to sign more posters.
No comment, no comment, no comment. Yeah, where's mine, damn it? Now, do you have any other style of distribution plans? Are you planning to take it to different festivals around, in different areas?
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of interest, thankfully, of the fine fans in the Northeast at the, I want to say it's November 22nd, and I don't have a calendar in front of me, but the week before Thanksgiving in New York, the Rocksaw Film Festival, it's going to be going Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's all wrestling, which is the first time it's being done this way in Midtown Manhattan, downtown New York City.
Nice.
I'm proud to be a part of that, and also on November, the week before that, November the 15th, Saturday, I think that is, in Chicago, I'll be screening it at Lisa Marie Varon's or Tara from TNA or Victoria from WWE, whatever you want to know her as.
Right.
Her restaurant, the Squared Circle in Chicago, I'll be screening it there as well.
The 15th is a Friday.
For a matinee showing, which would be great. So, showings in Chicago, New York, and then where everything else comes up, man, I'm open. Hit me up. Find me. You want the movie? Come talk to me.
Now, in-ring appearances you've got coming up.
I leave it a couple days for Australia for 2 weeks, and then again, I wish I had my calendar in front of me. See, if I was professional and I actually knew what I was doing, I probably would have all this in front of me, wouldn't I? But that's all available. You can find that on my Facebook. I'm pretty solid through the end of the year. And then, as I have for the last five, we reevaluate and see what happens next.
Now, for those who are able to order and are ready to order the movie, where can they find it?
Two spots. If you want the full Monty, the package, the movie itself, plus all seven matches, the interviews, promos, and behind-the-scenes stuff that go along with it, only place to grab that is at www.7levelsofhate.com, and that's all spelled out. If you don't know how to spell 7 levels of hate, I don't even want you to order my damn DVD. I want you to go back to school. If you just want the movie itself and you don't like DVDs or having the discs around, you can get the digital download of the film itself, that is sans the matches, the promos, the backstage, the fun stuff. That is available exclusively at highspots.com. They've been extremely helpful in this process, and I can't thank them enough.
First off, thank you. It has been an honor. It's been a lot of fun having you back on. And it's like I told you from before we went live with the taping that I was going to ask some very pointed and some poignant questions throughout the entire thing. And you've 505 over the center field wall all over again. And
well, I appreciate you having me. I mean, we could have had more questions about Kim Kardashian's ass. That would have been fine, too.
No. No. But now everybody can keep track of you, of course, at Scrap Daddy AP over on Twitter. Give them the rest of the addresses.
I don't know. Find it's on Facebook. Plug my name and you'll find it. It's it is what it is. ProWrestlingTees.com/AdamPierce. If you are a lovely lady, and I know I mentioned that the majority of the panties were size XL. All I'm saying is that they're available for you. So if you're big, you know, large, whatever. Come get some, baby. They're there for you.
I'd like to ask you to lay out one closing comment as it pertains to the DVD itself, to the entire documentary itself of 7 Levels of Hate. A direct message from Scrap Iron Adam Pierce directly to the fans as it pertains to the video. What would you say about it?
You know what? I wouldn't even say anything about it. I would just simply say thank you. To the people who have supported the project, supported Cabana, supported myself. For those that want to kind of get a deeper understanding into what it is that 7 Levels of Hate was versus what it became, those of us out there in the wrestling community that kind of want some of the unanswered questions finally answered, now is the time to do that. If you're a fan of Cabana and you want to look at him in a different light, you want to see him perform in a much different way than people are accustomed to, this might be the DVD set for you. You know, and if you just want some fun old-time, old-style wrestling, stories told the way they're supposed to be, in my opinion, then 7levelsofhate.com is the place for you.
Definitely, from my perspective, order the copy that has all the backstage promos, all the matches, as well as the full documentary. I guarantee you, you will enjoy it. And those are true. You will not find more true words, because I've watched the matches. I caught up with the promos and the documentary itself. You will watch it more than once. I guarantee you that. And
I appreciate that.
One of the driving forces behind that DVD is the primary driving force behind that DVD. Director, producer, editor. How much, I was going to ask the dumbest question I could possibly ask. How much hair did you pull out before you were done?
Yeah, that would be a dumb question, wouldn't it?
That would be one to ask just to see how you would respond. Adam, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for coming on board. Ladies and gentlemen, our very special guest, the one, the only, Pierce Texas Ranger. I'm sorry, Scrap Iron Adam Pierce has once again gone beyond ringside. Folks, real quick reminders, you can join us live Saturday mornings, 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central. Sunday evenings, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 Central. And of course, be sure to keep your eyes on beyondringside.com. And for those who are really brave, drop by and say hi at fasteddielane.com. Until next we meet, we'll catch you on the live cuts. But for now, this is the Magic City Motor Mouth on behalf of the entire crew at Beyond Ringside saying bye for now.